Music and Booze with Mo is co-produced and distributed by Nitty Grits, the media division of the National Food and Beverage Foundation, changing the world one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there's a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. We are headed back down to my hometown of San Diego to talk to Stefan Krapinski. He's very involved in the bartending scene in San Diego, so much so that he is the co-founder, along with Eric Castro, of Bartenders Weekend, which will be happening in March, and anyone can go. Go look it up online. It's a great event full of education and drinking. A really wonderful time. But Stefan also revitalized George's by the Cove. George's is a somewhat historic because it's been there for a long time, but maybe not long enough to actually qualify as historic. A restaurant in La Jolla, beautiful place. When I was a kid, it's where you went for the prom or with your grandparents. But he's made it relevant again. Top-notch cocktail program, amazing views, and fabulous guest bartenders. He's also the USBG chapter president of San Diego. And he's played in lots of bands, so it's time for another podcast with another fabulous guest. Let's take a listen.
I'd like to start to sing. Just tell everybody who you are. I already checked it. You're good.
Oh, good.
Tell awesome. Everybody who you are and, you know, what bars you've been at.
Sure.
All that stuff.
Yeah. Stefan Krapinski from San Diego, California. I've been a bartender for 18 years. Most notably recently, I was the creator behind George's Level 2 at George's at the Cove, a craft cocktail bar for La Jolla, the first one in north of the 8, really, here in San Diego. And then most recently, 100 Proof, which recently bit the bucket. But I'm the United States Bartenders Guild local chapter president for San Diego. Consulted on a really amazing bar down in Tijuana called North Deco. Just do a lot of consulting and projects and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. That's amazing. You know, I grew up in San Diego, as we've discussed, but when I was here, Tijuana was, it was Revolucion.
I moved from San Francisco about 14 years ago, and that's where I cut my teeth bartending. But
was in Tijuana or in San Francisco?
No, in San Francisco.
I'm like, because I want to hear those stories too.
I cut my teeth learning
a bit of
Spanish.
If you were in the Tenderloin, that could be similar to what I knew.
Especially back then.
Yeah.
No, when I first moved down here, it was a real rough place.
Yeah.
And it took something like that, signing onto a project like that, to force my hand to go down there more and kind of integrate with the culture.
See what it's becoming.
And see what really endeared me to that entire town was, I know this is kind of off topic, but not really, though, because one of the big push and the thing I was trying to explain is that it's interesting to see a city that's revitalized itself and rediscovered itself and taken back the town from the drug lords and, you know,
my family is from Cali, Colombia.
Yeah.
So there were similar things when the drug war went away there.
Sure.
Everyone was like, oh, you mean we can actually live and show people what we have to offer, and right. let's not have people think of this area as just a drug-infested kill zone.
Yep.
Let's show them how great our music is, how great our food is, and I know Baja has very much done
that. What's
that.
Cool about Tijuana is that it wasn't a politician, it wasn't a movement from the elite
yeah.
that created what you now see in TJ. It was like it was the artisans.
It
yeah,
was
exactly.
The craft people,
it was bands. It was music. Mm-hmm. It was art. It was it is. It is music. Mm-hmm. It is art. It is culinary. It's chefs. Mm-hmm. It's bartenders and it's bar. You know, it's the craftsmen that are bringing that town into the forefront in a wider sense. And
yeah.
to have gastro truck collectives
right happening in Tijuana,
but having them published internationally in major publications in the U.S. and in the U.K. and beyond, that like, hey, there's something going on in Tijuana. You need to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Even what really told me that TJ was back was when the San Diego Tourism Authority is using it as a tool to sell San Diego.
Yeah,
it used to just be like San Diego was whitewashed. It's beaches. Yep. It's mm-hmm. it's a zoo, and that's about it. Maybe some craft beer if we're talking about last like 7-8 years.
yeah.
But even before that, when I first moved here, that was hard to define.
Yeah.
But now, yeah, they're using it, and I've traveled around the U.S. and around the globe.
Yeah.
In support of San Diego tourism, and we always talk about the interaction between the two cities and the fact that when both cities have been successful is when they've worked together mm-hmm. and that there's been, you know, a dialogue. And right now we're in one of those renaissance periods.
That's
for sure.
Awesome. And yeah. you're at George's too.
Right.
So now George's itself, hasn't that place been there for a while?
It's been there since the 80s.
Okay, that's 80s. What I thought, yeah. because I remember growing up with, I used to work with Spike and Mike's Festival of Animation.
Oh,
and that
yeah.
was right down the street there at the museum.
That's right. They did used to hold it there.
They held,
I was in San Francisco at the time, and they
yeah.
used to play
and
used
they
to play
at the Palace of Fine Arts.
Yep.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Just go every year.
Yep. So, I, you know, in the summer times, I'd be working down there. And I thought, and that was like in the early 90s.
Yep.
But I thought George's there. Had been there. But I feel in the last couple years, George's has sort of reinvented itself or put itself on the map.
That's what's unique about George, and there actually
okay.
is a George.
There
hour.
Is a George
yeah,
at George's.
Yeah,
okay.
It's crazy. he's been successful, you know, partly because he's in La Jolla, and it's a place that people love to go.
It's when a Tony in, town.
When they're in San Diego, for sure. It's one of those things that if you just, you know, and if you're listening to this from somewhere other than Southern California, when you think of San Diego, you generally think of, you know, the zoo. You think of mm-hmm. its proximity to Mexico, maybe. You think mm-hmm. of beaches.
Mm-hmm.
You might think of good craft beer. Hopefully you will. You know?
Yeah. I think for the last decade.
Hopefully you'll think of fish tacos or like some sort of Baja
right.
fresh cuisine. In what we're doing here, what the renaissance that's occurring in Southern California and into Northern Baja. But what you will think of is like sprawling beach area in like beautiful views.
The picturesque
in La Jolla.
La Jolla.
Yeah.
You may not know you're thinking of La Jolla, but you're thinking of La Jolla.
Right,
when
and that's
there,
what George has been able to sell mm-hmm.
yeah.
for 40 years, or almost 40 years.
Yeah, God, that's crazy to think it's been that long.
I know. It's funny because even the executive chef who's a partner will talk about how, you know, whenever they're doing an offsite event, there's always these people like, oh, we had our
their
no,
prom there.
Yeah, prom just, there. And, he's yeah. like, and he's just like, he always puts his hands in his palms. He's like, oh, my palm in his face. But no, what's been successful for George mm-hmm. is that every 5, 6, 7 years, he has the wherewithal and the cojones and the mindset to change,
mm-hmm.
right? To try change and,
yeah.
and to move forward a little bit. You know, I'd say about 9, 10 years ago, they changed over a very dated fine dining restaurant into a more modern, like modular, you know, small plates,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Very fresh Baja California mm-hmm. cuisine called California Modern. And that was a real gamble, and it paid off. And they ended up, you know, when I started working there, I think it was about 6.5 years ago, they were number 71 on the world, on the world's 100, I believe,
mm-hmm.
at the time. That's
amazing.
That's really great.
You know, and yeah, that's the thing is George's was something that to me was, I remember from high school,
right.
I remember there was a George's, and then a few years ago I started hearing about George's again. I'm
yeah.
like, is that, that's got to be the same George's, it's George's
it
by
is.
The Cove.
Yeah.
But I was hearing it
I was
in
lucky
this...
enough that George allowed me to gut one of his floors
uh-huh.
and turn it into a cocktail bar.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Then
yeah.
I started hearing about it as a cocktail bar. Yeah. And having these fantastic drinks, having these great theme nights, doing
exactly.
whatever stuff. So you were part of that.
Yeah, it was my brainchild.
Yeah,
and
that's incredible.
I was lucky enough that they would they had the ability to throw
to
some money
that.
At it and give
yeah.
it a try.
Yeah,
but,
that's
and it's
awesome.
And it's thriving. It's the one. I mean, the terrace on the rooftop is crushing because it's overlooking
it's
the
a rooftop it's overlooking.
They haven't
La Jolla
had to change
Bay.
Much. You know, yeah. downstairs is its own little thing, but it's the one floor that's growing year over year now. Mm-hmm. We're seeing there was ability to grow on that floor, and so mm-hmm. I'm happy that it was possible to do that.
This cat is so. There's a cat
here.
Yeah,
I have a cat here, and
we have a cat here who's like
guard
seeing
cat.
Things.
He's listening,
and now we're like, ooh, what's happening out there? So then you did that, and you had Hunter Proof for a bit, which
right.
I was lucky enough to get to see before
yeah,
it closed down.
Was that for Bartenders Weekend?
No. Actually, I was
shameless
just
plug
here.
Bartenders Weekend.
Yeah.
San Diego, California, March 2020.
Yeah, actually, I'll have to come down for Bartenders Weekend.
You
no,
do. That's a party.
I kept hearing about Hunter Proof mainly because of our mutual friend Nathan Hazard.
Yep.
He was always doing events there, things going on there, and
good buddy.
Whenever I come to town, if I'm not staying with my family in North County, then I am staying at the Lafayette,
mm-hmm.
right? The Lafayette Hotel, which for anyone who has not come to San Diego and you want to stay in the kind of, I don't want to say the hipster part of town, but it kind
well,
of is
now.
That's
what it is, yeah, North Park.
North Park is the Silver Lake of San Diego
yep.
these days and everything, and what can I say? I love those parts of town.
Sure.
So I stay at the Lafayette, and I can walk over to Hunter Proof. So I actually had brunch there.
Yeah, good brunch.
I think, I want to say it was in June when I was there.
Sure.
And
right.
I had like a cereal Ramos Fizz.
Yep.
Was it a Fruit Loop Ramos Fizz?
Fruit
Is that
Loop.
What it was?
Fruit Loop Ramos Gin Fizz.
That was delicious.
But it wasn't with gin. It was
no,
with Singani.
Yes, yeah. That's right. But
Singani has that like lemongrass
yeah,
thing going on,
totally.
Which is the predominant flavor in Fruit Loops. Anything that like you need cheap fruit flavor... Like artificially,
right.
That's lemongrass 100% of the time. So that was why I used that ingredient.
That one, it's yeah. fun. It was too. It was a really fun menu. I remember taking pictures of it and sending it to my husband, like, "Hey, check this out. We got to come back here. I've been
There's
trying to
it's
get here."
It's hard to get people to go out for brunch
yeah.
to a place that would normally be considered a bar.
Yeah.
So I needed like a gimmick like that
fun.
For sure. But the cocktails were delicious. So
yeah, no, the cocktails were great.
Stand by
and you know, I kept hearing from it, so I was sad to hear that it closed. But I know that you've been making up for it with pop-ups and such.
Yep,
you've been
absolutely.
Doing kind of creating experience. As well, it seems.
Always.
So you did like a tour, right? Didn't you do a
well, I needed to after
tour?
After Hunter Proof closed. It kind of closed with very short notice from,
yeah.
from you know my point of view. Unfortunately, the owners.
Unfortunately, that's
direction.
How it happens a lot.
Yeah,
of times.
Which is totally fine. But
yeah.
it, for anybody who has had to close down a business before, mm-hmm. it can be a very challenging thing mentally,
well, yeah.
physically,
absolutely.
Emotionally.
I was going to say, it breaks your heart, I'm sure, in some
right.
way.
Right, and it's... And
they
it's,
broke up the band, man.
It's worse, yeah. And I want to get into that, too, because
yeah.
I definitely have been involved in band breakups, but there's some similarity there. But generally, if a band breaks up, it's like, we're done, never playing again. You don't have to go on a tour for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, right.
You're just like, you're done. So it's kind of like that, where we had to go on tour for, 2 weeks, we had to finish strong, right?
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, you have to finish strong.
Yeah,
that,
totally.
And it was tougher. It was tougher because we had just launched a 51 cocktail menu that we're really proud of.
Oh.
It was something very unique for San Diego, and I thought it was an amazing menu.
Yeah.
And I had after a year, I had complete buy-in with my staff. So you have everybody there, 100% invested in the business, in winning every relationship with every guest and having those interactions, and everybody was so excited about what we were doing and what we were cultivating there, because we were playing that long game of it was only open for 2 years at that point. We were trying to just continue to be in a neighborhood and winning people's
yeah.
Hearts, and it was totally working. And unfortunately, decisions were made, but it was real hard because we had a lot of emotions. You
yeah.
had a range. You were angry. You were sad. You were crying. You were, accepting, mm-hmm. and then you were not accepting again. It was the first time in my career where I could say there was all these people on my staff that would like walk out, just like, that's it, I'm out, and then be back 5 minutes later, crying. Like, I'm so sorry, I left. I just didn't know how to deal with my emotions. But they weren't trying to walk
yeah.
out because they were angry, and they didn't want to be there.
They just needed.
They needed to
just get a break.
They don't
from,
know. Yeah, they don't know how
yeah.
to. So it was tough, and then dealing with the locals and the guests as well, and dealing with their grief
yeah.
was hard. It absolutely
yeah.
was. So where that all came from, that was why we went out on tour, is that I needed some positivity again, because mm-hmm. why I'm in this industry is because I get to help people. I get to share, creativity and, in world view and knowledge and just what I love with other people. And,
mm-hmm.
and that is a very, it's a cultivating thing. I nurture staff. I'm one of those people that like to mentor my my staff. That way I measure my success by their success, as opposed to how good my bar does, you know, how many times I'm written up in a magazine. What really, at the end of the day, what I'm excited about is to see people that I've fostered and given them the bug and gotten them into the industry and see how they handle success.
Well, you've been bartending, you said, for 18 years?
Right.
What got you started in that?
It was that same type of thing. It started out like as a magician's act, right? Like you go to a good bar and it just feels like they're on a different world and they're doing magic back there and somehow you get a great cocktail out of it, right? and I was already bartending, but I was bartending, early 2000s, we're talking about all the flavor martinis.
Yeah,
fluorescent colors.
So it wasn't
colors
anything, yeah.
Yeah, but then when you go
But you went somewhere and saw a talented bartender.
Sure, yeah, I went to Bourbon and Branch. And you're like, wow, look at that.
That's right, because you were in San Francisco.
Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, Absinthe House for sure, too. But Bourbon and Branch was that first time where I had that, like, wow moment.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, how are they doing this? I do the same thing every day, but it just doesn't look the same.
Yeah.
It doesn't taste the same. It's weird. And that was really the first time that I was 100% inspired. I got some inspiration from the Angostura bottle earlier than that. Yeah, because back then, bartending was, you hit a button on an Island Oasis machine and out pops a fucking, margarita. but then you'd have this one ingredient behind the bar, Angostura bitters. And you're like, what is this? This is like, this looks like a dinosaur. What era is this from?
You know? Especially since it has that label that is not attached to the bottle, really.
Yeah, what's going on? Yeah. I want to know more about that product because everything else I'm working with was the flavored vodkas and the really crappy 40%, bourbons and scotches and stuff that was prevalent back then. And then you got this one bottle that's 53%, whatever it is, and it's got all this burst of flavors and it's super bitter. And you're like, what is that doing in a cocktail? The only time you would grab it is when somebody would order an old fashioned and it would always be sent back because you try to make it one way that, one bar book would tell you to make it. Somebody would send it back because there wasn't enough soda water in it. Or like there wasn't a muddled cherry. Or if you did muddle the cherry, people would be like, don't put the cherry in it. So it was just, I hated that drink for the longest time because it was the boomerang drink. It's like, this is coming back. I know it is. If it was a ticket for a table from the service well, like I knew that drink was coming back because there was no specifications on how to make it. That bottle, like, sung to me. And then when the book Bitters came out, like, that was another like piece of the puzzle for me of like, oh, you can make your own, what is that? Right, like that changed the game too. So all those things really launched me into
your interest.
It but there was no roadmap for me, and there was only one time where I had some sort of mentorship, and it was really slight. I never had the opportunity to work at Bourbon and Branch. I know a lot of buddies now that were part of that opening team or right afterwards. But at the time, those were the guys I'd sit there and I'd watch and be in awe, like Eric Castro and Trevor.
I keep forgetting he was up there too. Eric's been like everywhere, man.
I know. Yeah, well, so he is. He has literally been everywhere.
Yeah.
I love him for that. And what's great about it is that he's from San Diego and, he lives in San Diego and he brings that goodwill back, and I appreciate that. It's something that I'm really excited about is being able to work with him and Chris Pitino on Bartender's Weekend, which is why I gave that shameless plug.
I've been wanting to come to that.
Offers us the opportunity to showcase San Diego the way that we know it, and that I know that if you come down to San Diego and to get that experience, you're going to be hooked.
Now, how long has Bartender's Weekend been going on now?
This will be the 7th year.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the
growing.
First year it started out as a pool party.
Okay.
Like an impromptu pool party for bartenders on a weekend, and we're like, wow, this is fun. We should do that again, right?
Yeah.
And then we added a couple little stops to a bar crawl at the
end. And now anyone can go to Bartender's Weekend.
Yep, absolutely. Bartendersweekend.com. You can get all the information.
There we go.
it's the cheapest and most fun, in my opinion, of all the like cocktail weeks or,
it's definitely seemed to have been blowing up the last couple of years, which, warms
year,
my heart.
1,500 bar professionals. And brand professionals.
Yeah.
But it breaks down all the barriers that you would normally have at a cocktail week or Tales of the Cocktail, and you get to interact with people in a totally different setting where everybody's a little bit more equal, a little bit more informal. Although we have tried to at least, create some structure for it. That way it's not a chaos.
Yeah.
Because obviously there's some liabilities there. But
yeah.
And then all the proceeds go to charity. All the goodwill comes back to the local market and chapter. It's $5 donation to go to Bartender's Weekend. and there's 43 events.
Really?
Yeah, it's a stupid deal. Yeah, it's a screaming deal. Most of the expense is covered by the brands.
Because
obviously they're looking for some interaction.
Amazing. And I really got to get down here for that.
And it's in March, which in Southern California is
great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's totally great. When you were just starting to bartend,
yeah,
then as well.
Absolutely.
When did you start playing music?
I started playing music when I was 5.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
What were you playing when you were 5?
Piano. My father never took lessons. My father never took lessons, and he always picked stuff up from ear. He was one of 7 siblings, and he was one of the last.
Yeah.
So all of his sisters growing up played. Piano.
Oh, they all played piano.
They all played piano.
Oh, so he was just hearing it all the time. So he was taking the lessons vicariously in a sense.
Well, he grew up in Hunters Point. Mm-hmm. There was very little money to go around. My grandfather worked at a brewery that doesn't exist over there now. And he also did concessions at Kezar. Yeah, he did concessions for the Golden State Warriors back when they were at the Cow Palace.
Well, my dad used to work concessions at the fair in the summertime, so I know that life.
that was his second job because he was working at the brewery during the day and in the morning and just trying to make ends meet for 7 kids. And
jeez.
He put them all through private school, Catholic school. So there was just a lot of hustle.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. There wasn't enough money for everybody to get piano lessons. My father did sports mainly. But he was really interested in his sister's piano lessons and all that stuff. And he would listen to his sisters play the piano. They would go off and play with their dolls or whatever. And my father would sit down and just try to bang out that same.
Yeah.
And he never took a damn lesson in his life. And he can play The Entertainer by Joplin and all that stuff. And you're just like,
how are you doing that?
And I've done lessons for 15 years. Like, just to use those two hands in mm-hmm. conjunction like that, mm-hmm. playing that style of music. So I started out playing piano, and then I had that, this was in the 90s, and there was a lot of, it was Sonic Youth and, dissonant, distorted
all the
guitars.
Noisy bands.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Alice in Chains and, Nirvana, all that stuff.
I was on the radio in the Bay Area during that time.
Were you?
Yeah, I was at Calyx for 10 years.
Oh, no way.
So you had lived
awesome.
There. I was on from 91 to 2001.
Absolutely.
You would have heard me in the middle of the day.
I definitely listened to all that stuff and was inspired by all of that enough to rebel against my father and pick up a guitar. And it was when I became a guitarist that I started playing in bands. And because none of my bands had anybody who knew how to sing worth a lick, I guess I had to
de facto. You had to sing.
Even though I'd never taken a lesson, never really sung in public before. I could carry a tune because my father was great. He mm-hmm. was in the choir.
Well, obviously, your family was musical.
Yes.
Absolutely. Already,
my grandmother owned a huge organ and would practice her hymns and stuff because she was the organist for the church. And then my father and my grandfather were mm-hmm. in the choir. It was a musically inclined family. And my father had no problem with me playing instruments. He just didn't want me to grow my hair long and play a really noisy guitar. But, of course, that's what I did.
I was going to say, then the 90s happened, and that's pretty much how it was done.
Right.
And, where were you guys playing then? Because, I mean, that was the height of my,
it was.
I don't want to say club days, but since I worked at the radio station.
Well, we started out, my first band was in high school, mm-hmm. so we would play a lot of, high school functions, mm-hmm. and which was always fun because, noisy, dissident band like that playing stupid high school functions. A lot of house parties. We'd play a lot in the East Bay because that vibe was going on out there.
Well, the house party thing was big in the East Bay.
Right, and there was a lot of all-age clubs out there.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then there's Gilman Street.
Yep. We did play Gilman a few times. We played the Berkeley Square a lot before it closed down.
Mm-hmm.
We actually were on a bill the week that it closed down, which really sucked.
Aww.
We were just like, we knew we were going to get a good turnout, too. And then after high school, we started playing more in the city at Milk, at where else did we play? Bottom of the Hill, Slims.
Mm-hmm.
I think we actually did play the Great American Music Hall once.
Wow.
Which was pretty rad. Yeah,
that's
opening
cool.
act for
but yeah,
Modest
still.
Mouse had a cancellation for the opening act, so we opened for
so
them
you
once,
guys got to throw on.
Which
that's
really
awesome.
Cool.
Very cool.
Yeah, that was definitely probably the largest we ever played. But yeah, that was kind of it. And then when I moved down here, I got too busy working for a while, which was really a bummer. And then about maybe 3 years in, I found one of my coworkers over at the Lodge, when I worked at the Lodge, mm-hmm. running their bar and grill. He played drums, and we were really both into, like, at that time you had, you know, Black Keys were really hot.
Yeah.
White Stripes were doing things. And
so it was kind of noisy again.
Yeah, noise. I know. I was like, wait, I know noise. No, but at that time I had just been playing guitar by myself a lot. So when you're by yourself playing an electric guitar, you tend to have to fill up a lot of space.
Mm-hmm.
So I was getting pretty good at filling up space, you know, just playing guitar. And then he played drums, and I was like, hey, we could just, you know, whatever. We could just jam at least so like we're doing stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And then it turned into us playing a lot together and going out and playing shows just as a two-piece, and then we started adding members as we went.
Yeah.
But I think some of my favorite memories as a musician was just playing with a drummer.
Just that part.
Just forgetting about noise. It, you know, and just being like, you know what? Let's get on stage. I can play a bass line and hold on to some sort of melody and sing on top of that. And if you hit the drums hard enough, and hit the bass drum hard enough, mm-hmm. nobody's going to know there's not a bassist.
Yeah.
And I can fill enough space for, like, you know, like a rhythm guitar and a little extra, you know? And that was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. We played a lot of, you know, great shows here in San Diego.
That's awesome. Very cool. Well, I've seen just this correlation with bartenders that I've met who play music currently as well in this, you know, it's that creativity thing. And it's taking what is given to you and making it work somehow. You know, you may not have all the ingredients at your disposal. Like, you may not have a bass player, but you just bang that drum a certain way and you're filling in that space.
Yep.
So I just have always found that just so cool.
Well, there's so many bartenders and people in the service industry in general that are musicians or artists, mostly because you need to make up monetary
issues. And see, that's the thing.
You know,
it's like, okay, are you a musician who picked up bartending because you needed to pay the rent? Do you have the luxury of doing both and loving both?
Right.
You know, being able to experience both.
The people who can juggle both at high levels, I'm always pretty excited
impressed
about.
By or
because I mean, when I was bartending, it was, you know, a different era.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started bartending, and I was bartending to pay for equipment, for gas money to go out on tour in Northern California, and to pay for school, because I was in school too. That was a real tough time. School full-time, band full-time, work semi-full-time.
So does the music find its way into your cocktails? Do you?
100%. Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
so is it like you've got a Sonic Youth-inspired drink or something like this?
Not even.
How does
I wish I could say it was that linear.
Yeah, because I know sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Sometimes
I don't think,
it's
really low-hanging fruit to use you know, band names or song names as titles
Some people will sometimes
names of cocktails.
They'll grab a song title and that will give them whatever spark of creativity they need to grow from. Sometimes,
absolutely.
You know, or this is we're doing like a Radiohead themed menu or something. You
know? Which is super
just
awesome.
In a mood for that, and that provides
like Trick Dogs. LP menu very tactile. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love that idea. But no, I
and
would
I think
say
there was
that
a place
me,
in. I remember a place in Houston I went to a couple years ago. I don't think they're around anymore. Moving Sidewalks, I want to say.
Cool.
But they did a mixtape.
Yep.
You know, they created a zine as
awesome.
A menu, and they actually had articles written within it.
I love it.
And it's fun. It's totally fun. It was interactive. You could sit there if you're by yourself. You read this like snarky article that they had written to mimic the 90s.
Yeah, the snarky zine thing.
Yeah, right. And
it's never that linear for me. Mm-hmm. And it took me, I'm 40. It took me maybe 39 years to figure out how my creative brain works, right? Like in music, you'll have this period of growth. And if you play an instrument, you'll know, like, and it's same if you're a yoga practitioner,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can get stuck at a point where you just feel like you're just doing the same thing over and over. And then you have this moment of breakthrough. And it opens this whole world of possibilities, whether that might be songwriting and get stuck in a rut and all of a sudden you're writing 7 songs, or, hey, you know, I've just been stuck playing, you know, similar chord progressions or, you know, shapes on the fretboard or something, and all of a sudden you learn one new one and there's this whole new world that opens up to you in music. It's the same thing in cocktails, is that you can get inspired by something that after, you know, a year of toiling can just open and expand your idea of what that could be, and you can look at it from a totally different angle, and it can open this new world of possibilities for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then, meanwhile, you can also get stuck in a rut where you're like, damn, what the hell? You know, I feel like I'm making the same cocktail and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's a lot of similarities there, and learning how your creative brain works, if you are inclined, and what inspires you is really important. It might be music that inspires you how to make cocktails. It could be cocktails that inspires you how to do music. Or
I was going to say, what is the jumpstart when you're stuck musically? What is the jumpstart?
I struggled with that, right? Because music can be a solo journey.
Yeah.
Even if you're in a band. But the time between with you and your instrument is a very like private thing, I feel like. Mm-hmm. It's just you, your brain, your hands, and an instrument. And sometimes that works in harmony, and sometimes it's totally out of whack. And I still don't know what the answer is to that. If I did, I'd probably be...
multimillionaire.
Or maybe not. Maybe I'd just be making money for a record label. We could discuss that another
time.
That
is true.
I'd probably still be in music primarily. Mm-hmm. But I got to a point where... I mean, we had a catalog of 50 songs. The band I was in for 12 years, we were so good, in my opinion. We were ahead of our time by about 5 years.
Yeah.
Probably a little too much. We were a little stubborn on how we wanted things to be just our way. Couldn't get signed to a label because of that. So we decided to do the punk rock thing, which would be to start our own label bring other bands in. And we started focusing a lot of our attention on recording those bands and helping them too much and not focusing on our own thing. It's something I'm really good at is just giving my time to other people.
Like, I was going to say, it sounds like you're really good at fostering community, though.
Exactly.
Created this label and you weren't making your music, you weren't concentrating on your music. But
and we never came out ahead. We were lucky if we broke even, and that was like all we cared about for like 10 years.
You could keep it going.
Yeah, exactly. And half the band was like, "Hey, look, we're seeing some measurement of success if we're breaking even. We're no longer having to have a job to you know, pay for gas." But we're breaking even on we had rent for the studio, we had gas for the van, we had string.
What was
money.
This band?
It was a band called The Breakdown.
The Breakdown?
Yeah.
Is this the same band that did the Great American gig?
Way back when. But yeah, so we had an ability to, you know, to foster some level of creativity and community, but on a really small level, right? Mm-hmm. Mostly East Bay.
Yeah.
But it was a model that I would use later, I guess. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But half the band was really into just giving, putting all the chips in, and I just wasn't. I was kind of tired of living, you know, at my mother's house or paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
And I figured it was time to probably focus on other things. Mm-hmm. And then right about that time, I moved down to San Diego, followed a girl down here. And
it's always follow partner,
up. And
right?
I still pine for that band, I'll be honest. Like, there's so many, just the time spent together, obviously. Yeah. It's the same thing in bars. Like,
I was going
to
say,
you go to battle with these people and they become family. It's not friendship.
I was
going to
say, bar families and bands, you know, because since I have come from this very music heavy background, I never played myself, but I worked in radio and all my friends were in bands and all my boyfriends were in bands and, you know, I would always be interviewing bands. And I noticed in my world as well, I saw this similar community happening in the hospitality world, bars in particular. And I see that, like you just said, you guys are in the trenches together.
Right.
And bands are on the road together. And it becomes more than just a friendship or relationship. It is family. It is marriages. It is, you know, and you get a divorce when you break up with bands sometimes, you know.
And you have that same, like, lament for what used to be. And, I mean, I love...
And how could we have made it work?
Yeah.
No.
No, we couldn't have. But we did, obviously. We were together for a really long time, and we shared some memories that I'll always cherish. And I still sing those songs. I don't really play them anymore because a lot of the songs that I love so much, like, I don't even remember what tuning we were in, but like I could sing them because I was a singer.
Yeah.
So I'll sit like, or I'll just be at home like humming a tune. I'm like, what tune is? Oh my God, that's
my song.
Yeah. Or like somewhere somebody will come up with some old track that they recorded or something, and I'll be like, oh, that's dope. Who did that? He's like, that was you. I'm like, what? That's awesome. Like, you have a better appreciation for things the longer it goes. But and same thing with like if somebody is inspired by one of your cocktails and creates something, you're like, damn, where'd you get that idea? That's brilliant. They're like, actually, it was something you know, got written up on like 2 years ago. I'm like, awesome. But you made it so much better that I don't even recognize it anymore, you know? Like, and that's what I love about our industry is that it does give me some, you know,
And I, around here is when I would try to ask you, like, well, what is a song you like to listen to when you drink this spirit, or what are some of your favorite spirits to create with? But I know sometimes that's like choosing your favorite child or favorite cat.
Not really. So I know, right? Well, this guy is my favorite. Sorry, everybody else.
They're not here right now. They can't hear. They can't hear us playing.
Well, notice that he's the one hanging out.
Oh, yeah. We've got a cat sitting here by the fire with us, chilling out.
Fireside chat.
He's totally down for this interview.
He's down for it because it's the closest proximity to something
to the fire.
Warm.
Yeah.
He's a jungle cat. So I can answer this in a really unique way, I think, because my band, The Breakdown, was... We called it that because we would always have a moment in the song where we'd break it down and rework it.
And then bring it back.
And that seems like makes total sense. But what that band was cross-genre. We didn't have two songs that sound the same. And that was why we didn't get signed, because they couldn't put us in a bucket. And I totally get that now. When I was a kid, I didn't understand. Yeah. I was like, the music's so good. Who cares if every song's different? Look at, one of my favorite bands growing up was Ween.
Yeah.
You listen to them. You'd be like, who is that? I'm like, that's Ween. The country band?
Yep.
Like, well, they just have a country album. And they're... There's only 10 songs on it, but the name of the album is called 12 Golden Country Hits. So. But that was how that band was, and we wouldn't put ourselves in a box and be like, does this sound like us? It's like, it's got my guitar. My guitar has a very unique sound. It's got my voice.
It's
very
too bad you
sound.
Didn't grow up in San Diego, honestly, because there was so much... The music scene in San Diego, like late 80s, early 90s,
was rad. Yeah.
It was all that math rock and weird and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, continue.
We weren't that smart. But, yeah. I mean, But the cool thing was that we all could play all instruments.
Yeah.
So we would turn.
So you could switch around.
Would then definitely change the sound, because my bassist would play a different rhythm guitar than I would. Mm-hmm. He was way funkier. Mm-hmm. And that brought something different. But half the songs were totally mathy and, like, you know, very linear or like super weird time signatures. But that's the same way it set me up to approach Cocktails in a very, that similar way. So a lot of people say they have a favorite spirit. Right, which totally makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you could be a rum nerd, you could be a whiskey nerd.
Yeah.
My first love was whiskey, but I love rum. I love agave spirits. I love Amari. I love it all. Aquavit, you name it. Like, I'm a cocktail guy. I've always worked in cocktail bars. I should be able to use it all and be inspired by it all.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have a favorite.
Exactly.
You can lean towards something. That's fine. And you should be beyond what's current trend, mm-hmm, you know, because you can get really trendy, and obviously if you're in, you know, trendy parts of town, that's going to be very successful for you until the trend changes. And if you're not on that train, then you could also, if you're timeless and elegant, then you're more than likely always going to be on some sort of trend, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where I thought our music was. It was a little bit more timeless in the fact that I think it was 5 years ahead, but 5 years after that, it could still be listened to.
Yeah.
Obviously, the way we compress the drums and stuff, it sounds like early 2000s now, but but at the same time, we could change the drum beat. We could put a fresh beat on it and be like,
holy shit.
Just the
fact that it sounds like early 2000s just shows you that it would fit in at some point somewhere.
Sure,
right?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that was the whole idea for me, is that you can't choose a favorite. You have to respect it all and showcase it all, because you don't know who's going to walk through your doors. It's not going to be the same mind that you are, you know, and you should cater to everybody. And in doing so, you give everyone an opportunity to enjoy and interact with your experience.
Now, tell me about your pop-ups that you've been doing.
Sure.
You just did one last week, right?
Yeah, we do them all the time, yeah.
Yeah.
I do them all the time.
Or was that just a guest stint that you did, the kind of
So when I
thing?
First opened up Level 2 at George's, I was looking for ways to get people to La Jolla, which is very difficult.
Yeah.
But I was obviously pulling from the San Francisco model when I was there, that early craft cocktail movement in San Francisco, trying to foster a community and trying to enjoy other people's success.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, hopefully, you know, get a little for yourself. But I've always found that if you're just out for yourself, you may succeed, but it's hard to sleep at night. You made a lot of enemies. More than likely, enough enemies where you're not really going to succeed. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you celebrate other people's success and your own, you know, your own community and in what you do for a living, whether it be being a musician and going to everybody else's shows and being the first person to clap every single time a song is done.
Stand up front.
Right.
So there's not that big empty
like,
space right
in
front of the stage.
Damn, look what this guy just did. That freaking, you know, that riff is amazing. Like, when you celebrate other people's successes, it takes the spotlight off of you, it takes the pressure off of you, but it endears you to everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to bring craft cocktails to a community that didn't have any, who didn't know what they were and only wanted to order, you know, 6 ounce martinis and all that stuff, and good wine, and offer them something new. And to do that, I needed to bring really quality, you know, like quality people through La Jolla and showcase what the craft cocktail community nationally is doing, internationally, to a community that didn't know it.
Yeah.
Right? So I would bring the team from Limatour in Mexico City. And we had a huge night where everybody was like, wow, look at what these guys are doing in Mexico City, you know?
Yeah.
We'd bring the Noble team in, and we had a line around the corner before we opened because Noble Experiment had never left Noble Experiment.
Yeah, totally.
In town. I mean, they'd done pop-ups elsewhere.
But I mean,
it was their first pop-up in San Diego.
Yeah, and people didn't have to make sure they were
That
week ahead of time, get in there.
Absolutely. They didn't have to make a reservation. Right. They could come in and enjoy a great view, you know? And the group that from Noble that came had an amazing time. They were really busy.
Yeah, there was, sure.
But we had enough people, thank God, to do it. We had people that were just garnishing because it was so busy we couldn't get it out. And they were kind of elaborate garnishes.
That's awesome.
But yeah, we just bringing people to La Jolla and fostering that community environment and being able to offer some real amazing talent at my bar, not just to my guests, but for my staff to see it and for them to get inspired to want to do new things. Because I can teach them the way I like to bartend, classic bartending.
Yeah, totally. But everyone has to find their own style and what they
exactly.
do.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just moved the needle forward in all ways.
Yeah.
And that was something that is never going to leave me now, that I think that's important to our community and to our industry, is that we continuously get out there. And if we have a good idea, we should get out there and show it to people. We shouldn't hide the way we make our orgeat, because everybody's making a good orgeat. Maybe I like mine a little bit better. Maybe the method's a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in that interaction that we push forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the sooner we get every craft cocktail bar, or any speed craft cocktail bar, on at least a competent level, the better it is going to be for everybody, because guests are going to have a confidence that wherever they go, they're going to get a good drink, which I know is not the case in the States right now. There's people who are really good at what they do, and there are a lot of people that are trying to, you know, get some of that love from the success that there's been without having the know-how, without paying the people that they need to pay to do the job right.
It's a great opportunity. You know, San Diego, it took San Diego a while.
Oh,
to wake up to this
stuff. We were about 5 years behind San Francisco, for sure.
But once it started...
I couldn't get a job down here when I got hired, because there was only two bars.
Yeah, it was like Starlight, right?
Starlight, it was Prohibition.
Depending on when you got here, Prohibition.
And El Dorado.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was three bars, and they none of them were hiring. So I had to take a management job at Five Diamond
Like a restaurant
hotel.
Or something? Oh, a hotel, and the hotel bar?
Yeah, well, I ran the hotel bar, and I ran the restaurant by the golf course, and I ran the food and beverage on the golf course, and I ran the food and beverage at the pool, just
to
cut
still
my teeth
be in there
do
to do hospitality there until your time came.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
until there was more opportunities.
That's awesome. So I think we got to wrap this up because I think my battery's going to die.
Oh,
but
shoot.
I know I was looking at. That's why I keep looking. I'm all, ooh, how much longer do I have? So I like to ask, offer a pairing to someone of music and booze.
Good call.
You got to have some. I mean, you can offer a couple of pairings if you want
to. Right.
You know?
Well,
if you
so
get a drink,
being
be it
here
just
in
a
Southern
spirit,
California,
whatever.
I would definitely suggest having some mezcal with some sort of, beach goth. just listen to the A-La-Las or the Growlers and have some mezcal.
That would
be what I say. And chill out.
That's a good one. Yeah. Do that down like an OB.
Wherever. Yeah, or Tijuana.
Actually, that's perfect. Definitely do that in Tijuana.
There you go.
So, very cool. Now I'm down. All right.
Cheers.
Well, thank you so much for sitting here and talking with us. What do you want everybody to know about? We've got the
Come to
Bartenders Weekend.
Yeah, that's what I would suggest.
That is in March.
Yep.
Bartendersweekend.com?
Yeah, bartendersweekend.com. That's in March.
And do you want to throw out any social media for you?
SJBERTO. That's SJBERTO. That's my Instagram handle.
And so find that, and we can stay updated on any pop-ups that you may be doing.
Yes, correct. Bake Shop Tiki would be the other one, at Bake Shop Tiki.
Bake Shop Tiki, which we didn't even get to talk about.
Stay tuned for next time.
Yes, totally.
Second fireside chat.
There will be Bake Shop Tiki in a town near you.
Correct.
At some point.
And we're going to bring it.
It will
worldwide.
Come through. Because you just did a California tour, didn't you?
We did, yeah.
Yeah, that was what you did right after the...
Sacramento, LA, and San Diego.
See? So that could happen again. Excellent. Good. Well, awesome. Thank you so much
for
talking with us today. Pass up the rope and you can put on your shoes. Hit the road, get drunk. Pack your bag. I don't need the ag on your knees. You big booty bitch. Start sucking. You ride my ass like a horse in a saddle. Now you're up shit's creek.
So Stefan has added one more thing to his resume since we spoke a couple months back, and that is as the national brand rep for Mr. Black Cold Brew Liqueur. So that's something you can find here in the States. He is driving all over the place to make sure that your more interesting and niche liquor stores, boutique-y as it were, and cocktail establishments have this. I know I've seen it all over Los Angeles, and so many people, they like the coffee, so you want to find that. So anyway, thanks, Stefan, for sitting down with us, and remember that Bartender's Weekend is coming up in late March, so go online and look for that. It's a really cheap way to hang out with a bunch of fun people, learn more about spirits and booze and bartending, and experience San Diego at a great time of year. If I could go, I would be there, but I know that I will be just returning from South by Southwest and probably dead to the world, probably sounding more hoarse than I do right now. So yeah, thanks a lot, Stefan, for talking to us, and I hope that you all got a little something out of that one. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com. And also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search SheBMO on Spotify, SheBMO. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.